Hello, this is Robert Noya, Editor-in-Chief of Sky and Telescope. I'm on the telephone with Bob Parks, Executive Director of the International Dark Sky Association, or IDA for short. Bob is the author of the feature article, The Battle to Control Light Pollution, that appears in the September 2011 issue of Sky and Telescope. Bob, thanks for joining me today.
Very happy to be here.
I want to start off by asking you that in your capacity as executive director of the IDA, what kind of duties and responsibilities do you perform for the organization?
It's pretty far-reaching. I manage two offices. We have an office in Washington, D.C. that is tasked with public policy and government affairs. We have the office in Tucson, and most of our programs are managed out of the Tucson office.
Now, the human population continues to rise. It's just passing 7 billion. Development continues in the U.S. and many other nations. And at times, it seems like there's no hope that astronomers and their allies can win this battle against light pollution. And yet, your article points out that, you know, there are reasons to be optimistic and goes on to describe a number of positive developments. What is it that gives you the most reason for optimism?
Well, if you look back over the last 23 years and you think about what the landscape looked like 23 years ago, hardly any street lights and hardly any public lighting used shielding or full cutoff lights. Over a period of two decades, what we've seen is a change in manufacturers' attitude to the point where most lighting now being installed, and the number varies between 70 and 80%, of street lighting and or roadway lighting is full cutoff. That in itself has changed the landscape dramatically. And we have a report from the National Academy of Sciences that came out at the end of last year that has shown in a positive way that some areas, including the Northeast U.S., California, and Japan, and some areas in Europe, showed up until about 2003, which was when the data that they were using was finished, that there was actually a decrease in sky glow in some of these areas. We're now trying to fund a study to take that information and then look at 2011 data and see if that trend has continued.
And I've always wondered why so few amateur and professional astronomers have become IDA members, and I've wondered why more astronomers don't become more active in the efforts to mitigate light pollution. What advice would you give, let's say, one of our readers, an amateur astronomer, who wants to become more deeply involved in efforts to curtail light pollution?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, Bob, and we've been trying to get the answer to that for many years. If we haven't convinced the astronomy community that we're worth supporting, then we need to do a better job. We need to maybe show them positive improvement. Maybe many of them feel like it's not improving things, so why should I waste my money? And I'm hopeful that this information that we're coming out with right now will show that the efforts have paid off. And if we hadn't been here, the situation could be so much worse.
Right. And it was interesting, too, because just before this article went to press, the IDA and the Illuminating Engineering Society jointly approved the Model Lighting Ordinance, or MLO for short, but unfortunately, just a little bit too late to put a more detailed description in the article of this MLO. So can you inform us a little bit more about what's in this Model Lighting Ordinance?
Absolutely. This has been a difficult and very long process. We've worked on a model lighting ordinance as the IDA for over 10 years. We've worked with the IES for 7 years, and it's been sometimes a contentious debate because we're coming at it from a dark sky perspective. Manufacturers are looking at it from the ability to do their job. And so at times, you know, there seemed to be quite a gap between the two sides. I think over 7 years, I was amazed at how both sides became closer and closer as far as their objectives. What we've got now is a template that any community in the United States, or actually in North America, can use to draft an ordinance. So we have 5 environmental zones that you can design your community and basically map out which areas should be in zone 1, 2, or 3. And in those situations, you can customize this ordinance for your community to really do exactly what you need it to do.
Now, I know, too, that the MLO has received some criticism that it is not strong enough. What is your response to these critics?
We have, you know, throughout the process, it's been, like I said, a very contentious debate because we have, from our perspective, advocates who have been working on a guideline and a criteria that has been established since the beginning of IDA, and that is a full cutoff lighting. So in the MLO, in most instances, that's what we have. We're developing a template here to guide cities in the right direction. So in some cases, there are allowances for decorative lighting, and decorative lighting is typically not for task lighting. It's not for, you know, the street, the sidewalk, or a parking lot, but it's there for decoration, for attraction. And designers and the manufacturers don't want to have all that light immediately eliminated. And we have had to compromise to allow a very little bit of uplight on decorative lighting. And when I say a very little bit, we're talking about less than 1%. And in those instances, some of our advocates have been unhappy. But what I have told everybody, and I'd love to tell your readers now, is that the IDA's mission is to reduce the total lumens in the environment over time. We want to make a template that's attractive to large cities who, by and large, over the past 2 decades, have not been interested in developing an ordinance. And that's our goal, is to really make outdoor lighting standards more commonplace. So the cities develop them because they're good for energy conservation, they're good for reduction of light pollution.
And I know that the IDA has been working with the National Park Service to study light pollution in U.S. national parks. What have you learned from these studies, and how can these results be applied to the nation as a whole?
Yeah, the cooperative agreement that we signed with the National Park Service in 2010 is a first for IDA. We're working closely now with the night sky team within the National Park Service, which is in place since 1999. A person named Chad Moore runs that program and has done an amazing job over the last decade to document the conditions in national parks across the country. They've seen, in some cases, degradation over the last 10 years that's just dramatic. Las Vegas continues to grow, continues to have a huge sky dome in that area. So national parks as far away as Utah and Grand Canyon see the light dome from Las Vegas. So there's been an initiative within the National Park Service to find ways to improve the quality of outdoor lighting in the parks and to also initiate conversations with communities around the parks. We're also working on technical standards on what spectrum of light should be used. So in some cases, we're recommending monochromatic amber light instead of white light because we have a feeling that that will be much less invasive to the ecology and to the wildlife. And we're using much lower illumination levels than have ever been used in the past. We're trying to make an easy transition for folks who are going to enjoy the beauty of the night sky in a park so that when they move around in it, they're not going to lose the view of the Milky Way.
And can you tell me about the Night Sky Brightness Monitor Project and what you and your colleagues have learned from that?
Absolutely. This is a project that we have been working on for almost 5 years. We had initial funding by a good long-term donor for IDA. This tool is a very sensitive night sky brightness monitor, and it takes into account atmospheric conditions, and it measures the night sky on a regular basis. It also is linked via the internet, to IDA, and we take that data and we can plot it over time. So this tool is accurate to within a hundredth of a limiting magnitude, so that we can show in very fine detail. We're hopeful that we can get some of these out in pristine areas, and some of them are going to go close to metropolitan areas. One of them is going to come in and be installed in Fairfax County, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. By no means is this a dark area, but Fairfax County passed a lighting ordinance about 7 years ago, and we've seen improvement in that area, so we're going to try to track and see where people adopt the MLO, for instance. We'd like to get a monitor in there so that we can go back a couple years later and show the community what their efforts have done and show improvement and give people hope that by doing these ordinances and using the MLO, you'll actually improve the environment in your backyard. Well, I guess the only other thing I would say is just visit the IDA website, www.darksky.org, and sign up as a member.
Absolutely. I fully support that, and I am a proud member of myself. Well, thank you very much, Bob, for taking time out to talk with me today. And we'll be staying, Sky Intel will constantly be covering these efforts to control light pollution.
Well, we appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you.